and welcome to another edition of the Mojo Break Dugout Session. Cody here, alongside me is Doug, and we are going to be getting into, we're in the last 20 games or so of the MLB season. So we're going to be looking at some of the teams that are right now fighting for playoff spots, or the teams that maybe have been a little bit disappointing, and actually look ahead towards next year. I'll tell you why when we get there, and we'll also be talking about some guys who call them late hype, post-hype prospects who have started to finally break out here in the 2020 season. We'll take a look at some of those guys that maybe you should think about buying or selling if you can't get your hands on, say, a Luis Robert or a Fernando Tatis card. Maybe some guys you should think about investing in. But Doug, let's get started with one of the newer releases coming out in the next couple of weeks. Just got pushed up another week, but that would be a set that is always highly anticipated for baseball fans, the Bowman Chrome set coming out next week.
Yeah, so it's coming out the 18th, so it'll be next Friday, September 18th, and as you guys know, or some of you guys that may be new, there's three Bowman releases each year. You got the flagship Bowman, which this year we were chasing Jason Dominguez, then you have Bowman Chrome, and then you have Bowman Draft. So Chrome is coming out. It comes out in two formats. You've got the hobby version, which is going to have your base cards, it's going to have two autos, it's going to have two mini boxes, one auto in each mini box with, I believe, five or six packs in each mini box. And then you have the choice version, which is just three autos. There's no base cards. It's all about them hits. And it's been the same format for a couple years. Bowman Chrome is known for getting its some of the bigger players. You've got Juan Soto made his debut in Bowman Chrome. Vlad Guerrero made his debut in Bowman Chrome. So there's definitely some big names that come out of Bowman Chrome. We don't have a checklist quite yet, but that'll be interesting to see from Topps and who's going to be in there. We know that Luis Robert is going to have a rookie auto to chase in there. Usually it's kind of like international Dominican prospects make their first card in Bowman Chrome. So stay tuned. Right now at mojobreak.com, we do have a special price on the hobby version ripped as a personal. So for $209.99, we're selling hobby boxes, which is about $70 to $80 cheaper than most retailers. It can only be ripped because we're doing it for collectors. We don't want to sell it and then have somebody, you know, basically resell it at a higher price. So this is for collectors, limited supply. I believe when I looked this morning, there was 10 left. So if you guys want to save a little bit on Bowman Chrome, check out mojobreak.com. And those will be ripped on our card shop channel on release day. So we're excited for that release. And as you know, the Bowman first chromes are the cards to have. And we'll kind of highlight some of those throughout this show when we're talking about the cards on some of their Bowman cards for the first time and their Topps cards.
Yeah, and I got to imagine, too, the checklist is going to be a little bit different this time with, obviously, no minor league season happening right now, so a lot of guys haven't had a chance to maybe play as much, or some of these draft picks haven't had as much of a chance to play in, like, rookie leagues or anything right. like that. So, it'll be an interesting list. Maybe Torkelson might be a guy that maybe shows up on here for a first Bowman, I'd imagine.
No, he'll more than likely be in Bowman Draft.
Right.
Sometimes what they do, so Bowman Draft typically has about 70% of the first rounders. And then they'll hold out some of the bigger names for 2021.
That Bowman. Makes sense.
So if I had to make a prediction, I'm thinking Spencer Torkelson will probably be in 2021 Bowman as the name that drives that.
Yeah.
But, you know, 2020 Bowman Draft, he is a possibility. So, but this one typically, like I said, is a lot of the Dominican prospect signings, the over international guys that don't get drafted, that just kind of get those big signing bonuses and get put into those minor league affiliates. And you get a lot of guys that are like, you know, 17, 18. We've seen Noelvi Marte get his start in there, his first Bowman. So it might be opportunity, especially with baseball not playing, like we talked about in other dugout episodes, that there's no minor league going on. So you may be able to get some of these hitters, these power
That's
hitters, for cheap, because you just may there's not gonna be any film on them other than maybe their Dominican film or their Cuban film or whatever that they have when they were getting scouted.
That's a great point. And you, like you said, we talked about, I think, in a previous episode, that the lack of minor league baseball is both going to be, I think, something that is going to negatively and in some ways positively affect the hobby, where there's going to be guys who are basically their cards are worth nothing, and then they have maybe one good week where they've just for years have just been kind of just unknown, and they have maybe a good month or two in the minor minors, and that value just shoots up immediately instead of, you know, kind of growing through the years.
One of the guys that comes to mind last year was Aquino. I mean, his Bowman was like a $2 auto, and then he had that 14 home run month, and then you got $150, $200 auto. So I definitely see probably some of the scenarios happening with this, and it could be a long play where maybe you just buy all the hitters, and at some point one of them's going to be a star.
Yeah, exactly. Just have your fingers crossed. Well, let's talk about the major league level and talk about some of the postseason races that have been developing in Major League Baseball. And instead of really focusing on some of the big teams here, obviously the Dodgers are on a historic run right now. The San Diego Padres continue to be one of the most entertaining teams in all of baseball. You got the Tampa Bay Rays in the American League and a very tight race in the American League Central. But it's been a strange season. I feel like I say it every single week. It's a weird year. But we are now down that home stretch. But we're also just a little over 40 games, or right around 40 games for most teams played in the 2020 season. Now, in a regular year, 40 games played, if you're not very good after 40 games, you at least think, hey, well, there's a lot of baseball left to be played. And if you're doing really well after 40 games, you either think, hey, here we go, postseason, here we come. Or you kind of just take your foot off the gas a little bit, maybe think, just remember that it's a long season. So I want to talk about teams that have been performing very well beyond expectations, and then a couple teams that have been playing below expectations, and look towards next year. Because just to put things in perspective, I've got here on the video the standings at about 45 games into the 2019 season. And the things that stood out to me here, the Oakland A's, a team that ends up going to the postseason, last place in their division, 9.5 games back of the Houston Astros, about 45 games into the year. The, of course, world champions of baseball in 2019, the Washington Nationals, 18-26. They had the third worst record in the National League at about this time. So that's what makes this whole year so tough, and so tough to really forecast into the future about where these teams are going to go, the future of a lot of these teams. So I think it's a good time to maybe take a look at some of these surprising teams. And I want to start with a team that Doug and I affiliate with very closely. That would be the San Francisco Giants, who, wouldn't you know it, the Giants are sitting pretty at 500 with about 18 games left on their schedule. They are 21-21. They're in that first wild card spot. I am as shocked as anybody that this team is doing as well as they are, that they are really primed in a good position for a playoff spot here. So, Doug, I'll just ask you bluntly here. Is this the start of the new Giants dynasty?
You know, I am the poster child for the Homer meme. As you can see, I'm back wearing my Giants shirt. They'll probably lose another 3 or 4 games, and I won't be wearing the shirt again. And then they'll win another 4 games, and I'll be wearing it again. I am the Homer meme right now. But, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, you lose Posey, obviously, for, you know, he had adopted some kids and, you know, he didn't want to risk it. So at the beginning of the season, losing your best player, you're like, our chances aren't very good. But, you know, you had guys like Solano and Yastrzemski that are just playing above what anybody expected them to do. The bullpen's been pitching well, and, you know, it's an even year. So I don't know if that rule still applies, but, you know, it's an even year for the Giants. And, you know, it's only, 4 years removed from some dynasty action. And, you know, there's some young players in the organization like Joey Bart and, you know, Helio Ramos and guys that can come up and carry the torch. I feel like there's some stopgap players right now, like Donovan Solano. I don't know if he'll be able to continue this pace. But what are your thoughts on the Giants?
Yeah, it's a peculiar position because I think, one, the way Farhan Zaidi, the president of baseball operations and sort of not the GM, they have Scott Harris there now, but he's sort of been the de facto GM the last couple of years. The way he operates, I think, from his time with the A's and then with the Dodgers, is to fill out that roster with these stopgap guys. But they're not just these guys who are going to maybe just a warm body to fill a position and you lose 100 games. Like, these are guys who are there to compete, to reestablish their value. I think look no further than what Kevin Gausman is doing right now for the Giants. He's been spectacular, had a great game the last time he went out and pitched. So I think he still operates with the mindset of, look, we're rebuilding. We're rebuilding this farm system, but we're not going to just go out there and lay an egg. Like, we're going to compete. And I think you're going to see that, obviously, with the amount of money this team has. Jeff Samardzija is a free agent this offseason. That's a cool $20 million off the books.
Right.
So that's going to be a big number. Maybe they don't spend big this offseason, but I think in a couple offseasons, they make that big push. I don't see this team, though, recapturing this magic they have right now, this success, and bringing it into 2021. I think this is a team that in 2021 is probably more along the lines of like a 70 to 75 win team. Looking towards 2022, when you've got, as you mentioned, Elliot Ramos, Joey Bart's already up, maybe Marco Luciano, Hunter Bishop, a lot of these young guys can come up and they could spend more money in free agency. So I'd say Giants, not quite yet. If they get to the postseason, it'll be fun. But I think in a regular season, in a 162-game season, this is about a 75-win team.
Yeah, I mean, consistency is the key, and I think the Giants haven't been very consistent over the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, you look at 2016 when they were at All-Star break. They were the best team in baseball, and then after the All-Star break, they basically had the worst record in baseball for the All-Star break. So, you know, and Kapler, I mean, Kapler does have a lot on the line. So he, you know, he's trying to secure his job after, you know, what happened in Philadelphia and some of the things that happened in L.A. when he was an assistant coach there. So I think he's trying to solidify his role and get himself, you know, established for a couple years as a coach. If you look at some of the cards, you've got Donovan Solano, who his 2012 update card is him on the Marlins. So if you're looking at it from a cards perspective, I wanted to talk Solano and Yastrzemski. So Solano's rookie cards, there's a gold sparkle that sold for $49. So he's relatively cheap. I don't know if he's necessarily an investment.
Yeah.
But if they get in the playoffs, he hits a home run or something like that, you may be able to capitalize. I probably won't be buying any Solanos. Now, Yastrzemski's an interesting situation for me. So you can get his Bowman Chrome, him on the Orioles, is around $60, 2015 Chrome. He does have some Topps Chrome updates that are selling for around $70. And most recently, Stadium Club came out last week, and it's a hard-signed card of him pictured with his grandfather.
That's
which
cool.
is a pretty cool item to have as a Giants fan, to just also have the lineage of one of the greatest players in Red Sox history on the card with him. So, and you could definitely see the distinction, the how they look. They look, you know, definitely like they're related. So that's a cool card to get too. So, but we'll see. Beyond that, I don't think Brandon Belt has a lot of value in the cards. I don't think Brandon Crawford has a lot of value in cards. Maybe just those two guys, and maybe Joey Bart, if he comes around and he starts hitting some home runs, that might be a guy that you might want to, you know, pay attention to, because, you know, everybody knows the newest guy is the one that's going to get the most attention when it comes to the cards.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more prospects in the Giants system than they have had in years. Bart obviously being at the top of that list. So there is going to be a lot of guys to look forward to for the Giants. I think Luciano is the guy at the top of my list as a guy that I think in about a year or two, I'm buying into it too much, drinking too much of the Kool-Aid, but I think that's a guy who is a top five prospect in all of baseball, if not even higher than that. He's got a, you know, young stud written all over him. I would want that Yastrzemski card, by the way. I feel like that's one that's got great crossover appeal too, because not only is that going to appeal to a Giants fan, Red Sox fans are probably going to want that on their hands. And if you could find a way to get a Carl Yastrzemski autograph on top of it, well, I mean, that would be something special.
Yeah, and we're doing more Stadium Club breaks, so if you want to try to grab the Giants, you got a shot at that card. There's also the base card version, which if you bought into a case break with the Giants, you're guaranteed to get some of the base cards of it. But hitting the autograph is obviously not guaranteed, but you can chase it, and they're fairly affordable. I mean, $37 on eBay on some of them that are ending. I think I'm going to go pick one up after the show.
I don't think that's a bad idea. Well, let's move on to the National League East. If the Giants are a surprising team, well, that pales in comparison to what is still happening in Miami. I think one of our first episodes, we talked about, wow, Miami Marlins coming back from COVID, basically a roster of has-beens and of career minor leaguers, and they're in it.
Yeah.
And here we are with about a month, less than a month of baseball to go, And the Marlins are still in it. They are currently in the second wild card spot right now, sitting at 18-18. They went for it at the deadline, acquiring Starling Marte from the Diamondbacks. And he also has a club option for the 2021 season. I think it's worth about $12.5 million. And if I read correctly, I think the Marlins only have one guy due to make over $5 million on the roster next year.
And can
year.
Anybody out there name without Googling any Marlins beside the one we just named? I mean, it's tough for me to name a Marlin.
I like the name Jazz Chisholm. Mm-hmm. If he didn't have the name Jazz, would I know him? Probably not.
And no. He came from the Diamondbacks, I believe, as well.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah. And that's the other thing with the Marlins is that they're doing this with a depleted roster. And I think I saw that about six of their top 10 players that are listed on the MLB.com top 100 prospects, six of those guys have played in the majors this year. And a couple of those guys weren't expected to be here till 2021, 2022 even. But this Marlins team is a great story. Would in a regular season, 162, would they be competing? Probably not. But to me, the Marte move means that they think they're going to compete a lot sooner than I think a lot of baseball minds and a lot of people around baseball thought they were going to start competing. Sixto Sanchez is now up. I think he pitches, as of this recording, he pitches tonight against the Braves, and he's looked impressive early on. So I don't know if the Marlins are going to be winning the NL East as soon as next year, but I think that the timeline for them, especially with the Marte move, has moved up significantly, and I think the Marlins are going to be maybe a factor sooner rather than later.
Hey, and maybe it's that they're used to playing with no fans. So you know what I mean? They're already used to having no crowd noise. So they've had that for years. You watch Marlin games, and they haven't been able to figure out a way to fill those stands. I mean, it's like, whoa, you watch it a game, and you're like, there's like 5,000 people in the whole stadium.
And they took away the best part of the stadium. The home run sculpture is gone. Come
right.
on, man. It was so tacky, and oh, it was awesome.
Yeah. So Starling Marte is, you talk about career minor leaguers, and I feel like he almost is a career minor leaguer. I mean, he's bounced around. His card is a 2011 Bowman Chrome draft, and he's on the Pirates. And you can get that for under $20 for an autograph. So you know, I don't know if I'd be going out buying them, but it may be somebody that you might want to keep on your radar if they do get in and they keep going and he's hitting a home run at the clip he's doing right now and he keeps it going. Might be a situation where you grab his cards. So,
yeah, other guys to mention, Sixto Sanchez, like we mentioned, Jazz Chisholm is already up. Lewin Diaz, Jesus Sanchez, Trevor Rogers, Monte Harris, they're all in Major League Baseball right now.
You know what's crazy is all those guys were on other teams, you know, because
yeah.
I do, but Sixto Sanchez was a Philly.
Right.
So that
right.
just shows you how much moves the Marlins have been making over the last couple of years. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's starting to pay off. I mean, if it gives them a nice little story here in the 2020 season, that's great. But, yeah, I wouldn't count them out. And they're one of those teams, too, that the Miami area is not a small town or anything.
Right.
It's not a small market team. If you can put together some talent, you know, what was it? Just a few years ago, they had the best outfield in baseball yeah. with Stanton, Ozuna, and Yelich. So they, if they can start to put together some of these farm pieces, they might be able to throw around some dough as well. Because like I said, Miami is, you know, it's not like you're playing in, you know, Pittsburgh or, well, maybe the next team, Cincinnati, where, you know, it's not the biggest market in the world.
I right.
think they can make a dent. Well, speaking of Cincinnati, as I mentioned, the Cincinnati Reds, where now we're going on the other side of the spectrum, a team that I think was totally going for it this year, made some huge moves in the offseason. Nick Castellanos right at the top, Mike Moustakas also acquired to really beef up that lineup. They already had Trevor Bauer and Sonny Gray, who had a breakout year or a comeback year last year, and they went for it at the deadline too. They acquired Archie Bradley and I believe Brian Goodwin from the Los Angeles Angels, and they've just kind of been floating around the 500 mark ever since a bad start, and right now are sitting at 18 wins, 23 losses. They're 2.5 games out of a wild card spot, and this was kind of a go-for-it year for them because of Trevor Bauer's free agency
right.
in the offseason. He is making $17.5 million this year, and you know with the season he's having, he wants to go get paid, and I don't think the Reds are going to have the money to do that. This is a team that I feel like has been going for a couple of years. I don't know if they're fully out of it because it's been kind of a go for it while rebuild sort of strategy right. for them. Jesse Winker's looked really good. Eugenio Suarez has turned into a great power hitter, although he's been kind of off to a slow start. I don't know what the future holds for the Reds. I think they're going to be one of the, once again, one of the most interesting teams heading into 2021, depending on the moves they decide to make going into next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you've seen guys like Puig on their team, and now he's gone, right. and they've been trying things to make it, and it's like, I don't know if it's a dusty curse or what it is, but it's like, you know, and Joey Votto is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most underrated baseball players in the entire league.
Yeah.
I don't feel like anybody talks about him. His cards don't sell for some reason, and the guy always is consistent.
Getting on base is not sexy. It's nice yeah. when you have him there. He's like he's like if the San Antonio Spurs were a baseball player, it'd be yeah. Joey Votto, you know? Yep. It's always good, but it's not sexy.
And he's also one of those guys that beats the rule book up like Bumgardner as
yes,
well.
So, absolutely.
I mean, he has that kind of stigma with him as well, which I think has maybe turned off some of the younger fans. He doesn't like celebration. He just likes to do his job. And, you know, and that's kind of what he is. It's just kind of like vanilla in a sense, I guess, if you had to describe yeah. him as a flavor. But, I mean, if you look at his career, I mean, he's always around 300. He's always getting hits when it counts. He's always getting on base when it counts. And I believe he's won a few gold gloves, right, if I remember
oh,
correctly.
Oh, yeah. A great defender, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's what you want for a franchise player, but I just feel like nobody really pays attention unless you're a Reds fan.
Yeah, they haven't been able to take – you know, they had that run in the early 2010s where they tried to take advantage of that window. He wins the MVP early on in that stretch. They just have not been able to take advantage of his talent, and they've got a lot of interesting young talent coming up in their farm system. Hunter Green is the yep. guy that immediately jumps out. I think that's the guy I would imagine for collectors is the guy who jumps out for the Cincinnati Reds. I think it could also be interesting to see what they do with Eugenio Suarez this offseason. Like I said, off to a slow start this year, but he had a 3-homer game just this past weekend. He's got tons of power. He's not very old. He's still, I think, 29 years old this year. And they've got a third baseman, Jonathan India, in the minor league system who is highly touted. I would not be entirely shocked if Suarez, who did sign an extension, albeit a very team-friendly extension, if the Reds maybe see what they can get for Eugenio Suarez this offseason, maybe slot in that top-tier prospect third baseman over there, maybe get another pitcher to replace Trevor Bauer, because there is still a lot of young talent here, and I think that NL Central, despite the Cubs' success this year, I think it's going to be very much up for grabs in the next couple of years.
Now, do we know if Hunter Green, has he decided to just be a pitcher at this point? Or I know he was a two-way player coming out.
You know, I don't know what he's decided to do. I think they're going to focus on the pitching for Hunter Green is the indications that I've
seen. Yeah, and I just went on his wiki page, and it says pitcher. But I know when he was drafted, him and Brendan McKay, who was on the Rays,
yeah.
were both like, oh, you know, these guys could do both, right? And right. Kind of like right when Ohtani came up, it was like the trendy thing, and both these guys were doing the same thing. But, yeah, it looks like Hunter Green has been switched to pitcher. And I think he had a Tommy John last year, so mm-hmm. hopefully he's back on track. And we haven't heard much about him because we're not watching minor league baseball. But
exactly.
hopefully he'll be back on track for them.
Yeah, hopefully, because he is an electric player with a ton of talent. And I think kind of a bit of a tangent off of that point about the hitter-pitcher players, the crossover players. I can't think of the word exactly, but
yeah.
I think what happened with Shohei Ohtani this year, especially and last year with the injuries, I think it's turned a lot of teams off from
right.
that idea of having a guy who can be your DH or your position player one day or 4 days a week or 3 days a week, and then a pitcher one day a week, because there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of injury risk. And we saw this year, Ohtani just did not have it as a pitcher. And they've decided, let's just go with him as a hitter right now. So I think a lot of teams decided that's a fun idea. It's exciting. But is it feasible? Probably not, especially with the amount of money you're investing in a lot of these guys. Do you want to risk it by, you know, it's a huge, huge risk. The reward would be incredibly huge if a guy can hit 30 home runs while also striking out 200 guys in a
right.
season. That would be incredible.
Well,
the
and then the DH rule, if that becomes uniform, that really affects.
Makes it a lot easier, too.
Well, it does, but it also affects that, like, if Hunter Green's going to start and he right. could hit when he starts. Because now that won't happen if it's a universal DH, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
that could change it as well. I mean, I know McKay's on the Rays, so that's the situation doesn't matter because they're in the American League. But the Reds could have been looking at Hunter Green as like, well, we're going to make him a pitcher, but he's going to be able to maybe hit 250 as a pitcher, you know. So that's an extra added guy in the lineup hitting. But we'll see what happens in 2021 if the DH becomes universal or not. So.
Yeah, maybe not 21, but I do foresee it at least the next collective bargaining agreement. I can see 2022 universal DH here to stay. Let's move over to the American League. And the first team I want to talk about is a team that has already gotten all of their top prospects up at the big league level, the Toronto Blue Jays, who have been playing not in Toronto. They've been playing in Buffalo. And before we started today, I did read a story that the New York Yankees, who gave up 10 runs in one inning to the Blue Jays, they were down. Blue Jays were down 6-2 in Monday's ball game. Yankees gave up 10 runs in the sixth inning. And apparently complained that it wasn't bright enough in the stadium, that the lighting's not good enough in this little minor league stadium, which you want to talk about, like, the most New York Yankee thing to do.
Yeah.
The lights aren't good enough in your little rinky-dink stadium, you know, not our glorious palace at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Like, come on, man.
They don't have a choice. I mean, they didn't want to play there either. So, I mean,
exactly.
It's like,
hey. They're not complaining.
You know, it's like somebody gets a flood in their house and you have somebody over to eat at your rental and you're like, man, this rental's not as nice as your house. Well, yeah, we can't go to our house. So.
Exactly.
What do you want us to do?
Exactly. So, yeah, making up excuses, you know. I think I saw somebody in the Blue Jays farm system said, yeah, the lights were dimmest in the sixth inning when you gave up 10 runs. So,
okay.
Yeah, right back at you. But the Blue Jays right now are second in the AL East. And right now, of course, you're second place in your division. That means you're in the playoffs. And the strangest thing about this is that it's not Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's doing fine, just not incredible. Kevon Biggio's having a nice season. Bo Bichette's hurt. But it's Teoscar Hernandez, who is, I think, just put on the IL, but has been the team's leader offensively. It's Lourdes Gurriel Jr., brother of Yuli, who has had a great year at the plate for the Blue Jays. They acquired a bunch of pitching at the deadline, and I think this is the start of the Blue Jays' reign here in the American League East. The Red Sox are dead last in that division, or it feels like they might as well be dead last the way they've been playing. They do not seem like they have a plan for the next few years to compete. The Orioles, I think, are still a couple years away. So right now, I think there are three spots at the top there, and I think the Blue Jays are firmly the third team. And if Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette, when they're healthy and playing together, can start hitting, I think 2021, the sky's the limit for this team.
Yeah, and you know, I actually just, while you were talking, I Googled Vlad Guerrero's first auto was in 2016 Bowman Chrome, and he was no surprise, obviously, when he came out. He had a lot of hype.
Everybody was
going after his cards. And I am absolutely shocked right now because they were going for around $1,000. I'm seeing some that are going for around $400 now. So,
yeah.
You know, if they get in, I know he's having kind of a tough season. He's trying to find his swing. But if they get in and he hits some game-winning home runs or he contributes, these cards are going to jump right back up. And so it might be an opportunity. And I know people are now looking at him like, hey, this guy's overweight. You know, I mean, that was always the fear when he started, that he looks a little bit big body to play third base. And now it looks, you know, it's people are being confirmed and they're saying I was right. But like I said, all it takes is a couple big moments. You know, I mean, look at Jose Bautista and that bat flip. I mean, Toronto fans are very excited for this team. Great fans. And I think with Vladdy's lineage, with his dad, a Hall of Famer, I think people will jump right on. They know the name. So,
if you
could find some good deals on some 2016 Bowman Chrome Vlad Guerrero autos, I would definitely pick a few up. And maybe if $400 is too much for you, maybe just look at his first Bowman non-auto graded and see if you can pick a few of those up, because those will be, you know, those will pop as well. Or his update rookie auto will be update rookie card will be another one to grab.
I think it's a no-brainer. Those prices to me for Vlad Guerrero Jr., that to me is an absolute no-brainer. And I know
it,
like,
seems,
you said,
like it.
I know the size is an issue, but, like, yeah, this guy could have a huge postseason run. We saw last year, it took him until that second half. He had a big second half push, and it was like, here he is. Here's the guy that the Blue Jays are going to see. Of course, he had that great home run derby last year where he would just put himself on the map for the national baseball audience. yeah, this isn't only a matter of time, I think, until this guy becomes one of the best hitters in all of baseball. He's still so young, so there's a lot of time to grow. There's a lot of time to mature. There's a whole offseason where he can have an offseason training regimen if you're worried about the size. I think that's an easy buy.
Well, and him. I'm glad you brought up the home run derby because, I don't know, call me crazy, but I always see a decline in somebody that goes late into the home run derby.
Oh, yeah, always happens. Always
you know, and he may be still affected by that. You know, I'd like actually like to see his stats at the after the home run derby for the rest of last year because I want to say he tailed off last year too. So
maybe at the end of the year, but he seemed to that almost seemed to give him the spark he needed last year. He kind of went the opposite way that a lot of guys do. Maybe at the in September, just you know, a full year of playing, and he hasn't played a full major league season ever until last year. But yeah. It is definitely something. The guy who I always think of is Bobby Abreu,
yep.
Where he hit more home runs at the home run derby than he did like for 2 years combined.
Yeah, I mean, even Judge had a, you know, he had a fall off. I mean, you see it a lot because, I mean, I don't know if it's the repetition of somebody just throwing the ball over the plate consistently and you're hitting 50 home runs in an evening. And then you have to face a slider or a curve or stuff in the dirt. It just kind of changes your routine. I mean, baseball is based on routine, getting used to thinking. And when you're doing a home run derby, you're not really thinking. You're just thinking, you're just trying to swing as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And more often than not, you could look over the history of the home run derby. A lot of guys have a fall off right after the home run derby. So I'm not saying that's the case with Vlad, but it might be something that, you know, hey, he's going to come around. He's just breaking out. He's going to have to get used to his routine again.
Yeah, exactly. He's young enough to that.
Right.
I think he can break out of that. By the way, it's the last thought here on the Blue Jays. If you're looking for a team, I mentioned Trevor Bauer earlier that he's going to be a pending free agent. He's looking to get paid. I think a lot of people have been throwing around Southern California teams. Say it's where he went to college. The Dodgers obviously come to mind. The Padres have been a team that I feel like I've been hearing all about with Trevor Bauer for years. I wouldn't discount the Toronto Blue Jays, who are ready, I think, to spend here. We saw it this past offseason. They get Hyunjin Ryu, who's been great. He's always great. Very quietly, one of the best pitchers in baseball since he has come to the major leagues. They've got Nate Pearson, who has been a highly touted prospect, one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. Don't be shocked, I think, if the Blue Jays spend big money on Bauer to make a run next year in the American League East. Let's move on to the Central in the American League. The Cleveland Indians, who seemed like big sellers at the deadline. They trade Mike Clevinger after really just everything fell apart with relationships with the team. After his night out with Zach Plesac in Chicago. And he gets traded to the Padres. So it kind of felt like they were selling while also kind of buying, which has been the way Cleveland has done business the last few years, and yet it's not affecting their record on the field. They are right now tied for first place in the American League Central. They've been playing better baseball since making that trade because they just have like a wealth of pitching in the minor league system. Shane Bieber is the best pitcher in baseball right now. Tristan McKenzie is a guy to watch. He is exciting and electric when he is on the mound. Carlos Carrasco has been a really nice story to come back in that rotation. But beyond that, the hitting has finally woken up. Franmil Reyes, a guy who, if I was a GM of a baseball team, I would just clone Franmil Reyes and field nine of them out there because I love the way this dude just mashes the ball. He's looked spectacular. But I bring them up because the guy we have heard about, I feel like for like the last 5 years, Doug, we've heard Francisco Lindor is getting traded. It's only
right.
A matter of time. And the Indians have been so tight, but their budget has been so tight, and maybe for no reason, it feels like. I don't know what they're definitely operating like a really small market team when I don't feel like they really need to.
Right.
I mean, they've got a wealth of pitching, so that really hasn't come back to bite them, trading guys like Kluber and obviously Clevinger. But I don't know. I think this is going to be a really interesting offseason for them. And I think maybe this is finally the offseason Lindor gets shipped out. And if he does, to me, I would say be careful what you wish for. And I would point out the Boston Red Sox as exhibit A of what happens when you trade out the face of your franchise rather than ink them to that big deal that they've earned.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think you need to, you know, and that makes the fans feel comfortable. I mean, you could – I don't even know what's going on in Boston right now. I don't even want to know what their headlines are. I mean, I'm sure their
They're totally irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure their fans are just waiting for the Patriots this weekend. The Celtics playing well. So I'm sure that they're not, you know, completely paying attention to the Red Sox. I'm sure Portnoy is more, you know, on the Celtics and the Patriots train going forward. But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy how things go. And you know, I remember that big deal they did when they got Adrian Gonzalez, and they got all those stars. And now it seems like they kind of took the opposite mindset by kind of trying to be cheap and, you know, send out some of their stars.
Yeah, and if you're the Cleveland Indians, I think that's what you have to look at. And maybe it's a decision of who are we going to spend big money on? Jose Ramirez or Francisco Lindor?
Right.
And if that's the decision, to me, it's Lindor.
It's Lindor. He's the face.
Yeah, he's absolutely the face of the franchise. He's got the personality. He's got the talent. And Jose Ramirez is a fantastic player. He's a really talented player. But if that's the decision, to me, it's a no-doubter that it's Lindor. They don't have a bunch of big-time free agents this offseason. I think Carlos Santana is the biggest guy they may lose. But the other part of it is they also don't have a lot of prospects in that farm system right now. I think their top rated prospect is like the 42nd ranked prospect in all of baseball, and that's it. Nobody right. else in the top 100 according to MLB.com. So to me, that's even more of an impetus to make sure you lock up the face of your franchise so that you can get some more great years. And you've got Shane Bieber, who's not very old. You've got enough pitching there that's on the come up. It will be very interesting, and I hope they're not resigned to the fact that maybe, well, this is now the White Sox and the Twins' time to take over the Central, and right. we're just going to fade away and rebuild. It would just, to me, just a waste of a lot of really good talent there.
And you mentioned Franmil and, you know, his cards. Another guy that's, you know, I feel like everybody we're talking about today was on other teams to start off, because this guy was on the Padres. So actually has one of the worst autos I've ever seen. So on the eye appeal of his cards, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he could have been like 16 when he signed the card. I don't know. But it's 2014 Bowman, Chrome Prospect Franmil. It goes for about $37. So, you know, they almost guaranteed to make the playoffs, and you know, mashing home runs might be a decent investment, but on the eye appeal of the auto, you got to see it yourself. Go on eBay and type it in. It looks like he put a couple lines, little squiggles, but like I said, sometimes these guys, you know, English isn't their first language. They don't really, you know, they're asked to sign these cards, and obviously he put a couple squiggles on there.
Yeah,
so.
Get in, get out. Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah, he's a guy, though, I think you absolutely should look into him if you're looking for maybe something that could be a bit, could pop a couple years from now, especially him in the American League where he can switch off with DH and outfield. He doesn't need to have a position.
Right.
He's just got so much power potential that you give him 500, 600 at bats, and I think you're looking at automatically, like 30, 40, even 50 home runs. He's got that type of potential for a long time coming for Cleveland, if, of course, they can hang on to him and not trade him away, which
right.
seems to be their MO right now. The last team I want to focus on is the Houston Astros, who have been the most talked about team in all of baseball, really, the last couple of years. Obviously, the cheating scandal. They have built a dynasty. They blew it all up. One of the worst teams in baseball to one of the best teams in baseball, of course, with that asterisk that apparently they cheated to get to that point in 2017. And they haven't faced the brunt, of course, of fan criticism. There's no fans there to boo them and jeer them. But they're still floating around just 500, 21-20. They are currently in a playoff spot, second in the AL wildcard right now. But they have just kind of not really done anything spectacular this year. No one really stands out. A couple of guys, we're going to talk about Kyle Tucker in a little bit, who I think has finally flourished and it is starting to find his spot in the middle of that Houston order. But Justin Verlander is hurt. Zach Greinke is really the only guy in that lineup, in that pitching staff, who you can count on, I think, to give you a really solid start for the Astros at the moment. And the guy pictured on our video, Jose Altuve, is having a career worst season. And I think going into 2021, I'm not going to completely count this team out. Yordan Alvarez will be back next year, which is going to be a huge, huge boom for them. It's going to be a huge lift for that lineup. But George Springer's a free agent. Michael Brantley's a free agent. Josh Reddick is a free agent. I believe Brad Peacock is a free agent, and Yuli Gurriel is a free agent. That's a lot of impact players. Like, your whole outfield potentially gone next season.
And I would say most of them are probably going to leave unless they just get.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. If I'm playing in that and on that team, I kind of want to forget about it.
Yeah.
Like what
get
happened.
Rid of that stigma.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you got a chance to go to another city, new start, maybe people forget about what happened, especially if you're part of that World Series team. I mean, one good thing about the Astros, I'm sure Yankees fans love it because I think the Yankees team was the villains. Before the Astros said, hey, hold my beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're basically the villains of baseball. And there's not even any, like, a second or third place on this.
No.
They have just become the most hated team. And for the right reasons, obviously, we have all the data of the Wire. And it's very ironic that Altuve is having a bad year after the Wire situation, after saying the tattoo was fresh. That's why he didn't take the shirt off, even though it clearly looks like he mouthed something that's along the lines of a Wire. But, you know. They're kind of getting they're getting bashed around, and you know I'm actually surprised they're 500 or around there, and but Altuve's I guess he's getting the brunt of it.
Yeah, he's just looked really rough at the plate. He does not look like himself, and you know some of their guys who are big contributors are doing just fine. Carlos Correa is having a very nice year. Alex Bregman has come back around, but I think that they're losing a lot of guys this offseason, like you mentioned. I think a guy like Springer, a guy like Brantley, I think they probably want to get away and separate themselves from that team, especially a guy like Brantley who was not on that 17 team. And so I think really would like to separate himself. Like, that's not me. I have nothing to do with this.
Exactly.
And it also could really affect them in free agency that are guys going to want to come to that team right now.
Right.
Money talks, but
you know, maybe getting pitches thrown at you, you know, your health maybe is a concern at that
point.
Why
do I want
to
be a part of that? Yeah. Yeah. Justin Verlander is also hurt. I understand that. But look, Justin Verlander is a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a Hall of Famer if he retires tomorrow. He's in the Hall of Fame. But the line that I always hear, Father Time's undefeated, man. He's 38 years old next year, and I don't know very many 38-year-old pitchers who pitch at a Cy Young caliber level. And if the Astros are expecting that for Verlander.
Especially since they test for steroids now as well. So
also that. I'm not making any assumptions. Like I said, Hall of Famer if he retires tomorrow. But I think this may be the beginning of the end for this Astros dynasty. Well, let's move on. We'll wrap things up here with some card talk. And as I mentioned, a guy like Kyle Tucker on the Astros, who is one of the few bright spots on that team, has been a top prospect. A guy I feel like that's been talked about for a long time and is finally starting to show signs that he is a top-tier player in Major League Baseball. And he's not the only guy like that that I like to call these guys sort of post-hype prospects, guys that early on in their baseball life were really highly touted, guys that I'm sure were cards that people were chasing, guys that people, collectors, I'm sure were really high on and wanted to grab these cards and have been sort of pushed aside for the, you know, Fernando Tatises and the Luis Roberts of the world. So I want to talk about a few guys here that, and Doug, I'll throw it at you, that if you are buying or selling right now, where are you on these guys? Let's start with Tucker, who is having a very nice year for the Houston Astros. He's actually been one of the best hitters, one of the few really bright spots in that team right now. He's batting .276. He's got a .908 OPS, 8 home runs, 37 RBIs. He's only 23 years old. I was looking at some of his cards. A lot of his autos are floating around. I think I saw some that were like in the 50 to 70 range. So like nothing really, really crazy for him. To me, this is a guy I've really liked for a lot of years. I've heard a lot about him. So I think to me, this is a guy that if you're looking for someone who is past that hype phase, I think Kyle Tucker could be a guy that really could flourish.
Yeah, his cards are starting to pick up a little bit. He was in 2015 Bowman Chrome draft. A recent PSA 10 sold for $280, so they're starting to pick back up. I make a couple analogies here that, you know, Carlos Correa cards are way down. Springer cards seem to be way down. You know, maybe the Astros fans are like, well, this guy really wasn't associated with it. Maybe he's the new coming of the franchise. So you're starting to see some money head his way. But, yeah, he was selling for more. One thing I wanted to point out is, you know, people are looking for old wax to get into and chase. The 2015 Bowman draft, now they did make a ton of it. They made hobby, regular jumbo, and then they made super jumbo. But the list of players in there, there's not a huge name, but there's a lot of guys that have the ability to be a huge name. You've got Brendan Rodgers. You've got Andrew Benintendi. You have Austin Riley. You have Ryan Mountcastle. Dansby Swanson, yeah. Even though he's pictured on the Diamondbacks. So there's a lot of potential. And Kyle Tucker, DJ Stewart. I'm just looking at the checklist right now. Ian Happ. So these are all their first Bowmans. First Bowman Autos, Josh Naylor, James Capriellian. It's a fantastic product with a lot of potential, and it's not priced as high as your wax in 2020 with Jason Dominguez. So yeah. If you're looking for something old to rip, and the hobby version, which they don't make anymore, only has one auto, could be pretty affordable to look and see if one of your online retailers, maybe we'll bring some in. And it's a pretty good little set. But I think I'm considering buying Kyle Tucker. I want to watch a little bit more and see where they're poised for the playoffs. But I'm a little on the edge because he's an Astro right now because of the cloud and the stigma.
Yeah, that team just kind of holds. It's just a bad taste, left a bad taste in people's mouths. But yeah, you're onto something where I think a lot of guys maybe are getting off of the Astros that were part of that scandal, looking at the fresh new blood here with Kyle Tucker. And that 2015 list, there's a lot of guys there that I think are interesting. And I would put Tucker right at the top of that list in terms of talent. So yeah, I think that's a great place to start. And
you got to remember Jordan's hurt. So maybe, Jordan and Tucker and, 2022, 2023 are the best hitters in the team.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to another American League team, the best team in the American League, the Tampa Bay Rays. And, I'm throwing Willy Adames in here, who was one of the top prospects for the Rays for many years and came up last year, had in a full season, and I think he hit around 20 home runs, but didn't light the world on fire. So I think the talk around him, the hype around him really died down. And then, of course, he plays in Tampa, which I apologize to any Rays fans out there. It's not like you're playing in New York City when you're playing in Tampa Bay. It's the baseball world, unfortunately, sometimes leaves them to the side when it comes to that conversation. But he's having a great year for the Tampa Bay Rays, and a great year for a team that is right now pretty much, no doubt, is the best team in the American League. Got an 896 OPS with five homers. He's just 25 years old. But I think the thing that maybe is hurting him, the fact that Wander Franco is right there at his coattails. And I guess, like I said, unfortunately, if you're Tampa, maybe you could justify, well, I'm going to hang on to this top, like a Gleyber Torres, and I'm going to hang on to Jason Dominguez right now. They're both Yankees. They're both going to be great. But it's like, do you really want to hang on to a Willy Adames and a Wander Franco, or maybe you pick one of the two that collectors are going to go towards?
Yeah, I can't see them coincide. I know they're in first place right now, but I'm looking at a recent 2015 Bowman Chrome, so not draft, the Chrome version of Bowman he was in, and a Refractor 9510 recently sold for $125. I think I'm selling at that price personally if I own one because, you're right about the Wander Franco. He probably will get moved at some point. I think when Wander's ready, hopefully the Rays are probably hoping that Willy Adames is still playing at a high level and they might be able to trade him for somebody else. That might be something that does move the needle. Like if he does, say Gleyber Torres doesn't pan out and he goes and plays shortstop for the Yankees, that could obviously, have some new blood invested in him. But, you could also go to like the Diamondbacks or a team like the Pirates where – it'll probably hurt his value going to a team like that. But like I said, I think Wander Franco is a couple years away. He's still very relatively young. We'll see how this season plays out with Adames. But I would be watching his market every day if you own a couple of his cards.
Yeah, exactly. I think the fact that Franco's right there and they play the same position, that's what's absolutely really going to hurt him.
And frankly, usually Rays cards do not sell.
Exactly.
We watched Longoria become, one of the most fabled prospects in 2007 to his prospect cards not really selling. I'm not saying he's Hall of Famer, but it seems like none of their cards ever really sell except for Wander Franco. So that kind of gives you some proof in the pudding there that maybe Adames' time is now to sell.
Yeah, and you imagine if Wander Franco was on the Yankees or he's on a team in Chicago or LA or whatever it may be, that would he be, he'd be going through the roof.
Yep.
Because he is undoubtedly right now the best prospect in all of baseball, almost across the board. Every major prospect list has got him number one. Let's go on to a player that was highly touted in the Dodgers farm system for many years, Alex Verdugo, who is having a good season with the Boston Red Sox right now. 311 batting average, 873 OPS. He's got five bombs. He's just 24 years old. But we mentioned it earlier here on the show, the Red Sox, who are never irrelevant, are completely irrelevant right now. I don't know. Maybe some Red Sox fans are finding some solace in seeing, hey, Alex Verdugo looks good. Don't turn on the TV past 10 o'clock Eastern time. Good thing those Dodger games are on as late as they are, because I don't think Boston fans could,
they're already going
could
to
stomach
bed.
It. There are days where, the other day where I think Mookie Betts hit a game-tying home run. He's having an MVP-type year. Like, thank God those are on 10 o'clock Eastern time in Boston. I just don't know when the Red Sox are going to be good again. I think that's really the main thing holding Alex Verdugo back, because usually it'd be like top prospect doing well in Boston. That's a slam dunk to me for a guy who I would want to hang on to that card and save it for many years. But I'm not sure that Alex Verdugo is going to be on the next winning Red Sox team.
Well, and that's maybe the problem, too, is that if you are a Red Sox fan and you do want to buy an Alex Verdugo card, it's him on the Dodgers, and then you're going to remember that you gave up Betts every time you see that card, right? So, you know, from a fan perspective, it may be a hard pill to swallow unless Verdugo gets to the level of Betts, which, you know, that very few have ever gotten to that level. Yeah. But if you're looking at his cards, he's got 2014 Bowman Chrome, a recent ungraded refractor sold for $110. So people are definitely taking notice. I don't know what the data was when he was on the Dodgers. I'm assuming it was maybe a little bit higher, but they're starting to come back up. And, you know, if he keeps doing what he's going to do in maybe 2021, that might be a decent investment. But like I said, from a Red Sox fan perspective, it may be too painful to own one of those cards.
Yeah. If I was a Sox fan, no, I would be like, let's get one of these. Let me own, was it Jeter Downs? Is there a big guy right now? Which even that hurts. Like, even the top prospect's name is Jeter.
I know.
Like, it's just so right. Well, it wasn't painful for a while to be a Red Sox fan. Things were going pretty well for the last 15 years or so. So
I believe Jeter Downs came from the Dodgers as well.
I believe he did.
Yeah. So that was all. I think that was all in that Betts deal.
The Dodgers have got a whole lot of former prospects all floating around. Just to show you how good that farm system has been consistently for the past decade. There are so many former Dodger farmhands.
Oh yeah.
All just floating around baseball. But yeah, it's, to me, Verdugo, I think he could be a very good player. Will he ever be Mookie Betts? No, but who is? And you mentioned it would be a painful for a lot of Red Sox fans. Last one I want to talk about here is not necessarily a prospect or a post-hype prospect, but certainly a post-hype pitcher, and that would be Yu Darvish. You might be scratching your head going, why are we talking Yu Darvish? Isn't this he's established and all that, and he's into his early 30s, which, okay, fair enough. But I think, one, when he first came on the scene, this wasn't a highly coveted guy. And two, he really fell into, not necessarily a funk, but kind of just was like, well, he is who he is, especially after that whole World Series incident. But I just want to throw these numbers at you. He's currently 7-1. With a 1.4 ERA, 63 strikeouts to 8 walks. He's only allowed 3 homers in 50 innings this year. That compares to his 33 he allowed in 178 and 2/3 innings last year. He is pitching maybe the best season of his entire life. Now, I'm not saying here that his card is suddenly going to become super valuable or among one of the most valuable in baseball, but I do wonder, a guy who did have some hype when he was coming into the league, clearly was one of the most hyped Japanese stars probably since Ichiro. What does a Cy Young Award do to his potential value on the card market here?
Well, and that's one thing to keep in mind, is that when you're dealing with a guy that has an international following, you do have potentially more buyers for that card. So, you know, even Ohtani, with having a bad year, still sells pretty well.
Yeah.
Darvish's first card was in 2012, so it almost seems like eons ago. I think we were breaking cards at our kitchen tables at that point. And Darvish was the big chase, Darvish and Harper in 2012. And I remember a blue that I'm actually looking at right now. One of them, they're numbered 250, a rookie auto. I believe they were going for like $1,300, $1,400 at the time. A recent one sold for $600, so you could see that he's declined since his initial hype. But $600 for a pitcher is still kind of a lot.
Yeah.
But like I said, you have maybe double the amount of people that might be interested in buying his card. If he does win a Cy Young, you have the Japanese overseas buyers that are going to be like, hey, I want to by Darvish. So it might be one of those things that maybe you invest something on the lower end. Maybe you get in a little bit on the lower side, not a blue. Maybe just one of his better rookie cards and hold on to it and see what the Cubs do. And maybe he has a Madison Bumgarner type of postseason. And then you can kind of unload. Pitchers are very risky when it comes to collecting because, for one, they pitch every 5 days. And for two, you know, if you're just, you know, not blowing people away and having 15 strikeouts, it doesn't seem to really get noticed in the card market. So, but, you know, things that do get noticed is no hitters in postseason. So if he's in the postseason and performing, he'll definitely get some notice, and it may be a situation where you could flip.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, the big key is that even if he ends up having a Cy Young Award winning season here, you know, that's going to happen after the postseason where we find out he wins the Cy Young Award. And if he has a postseason similar to what happened in 2017, then that Cy Young season will be all for naught, basically.
Absolutely.
You know, it's people are going to remember the last thing you did. What have you done for me lately? But a Cy Young Award season plus a good postseason performance with the Cubs, again, and Chicago, too, where, you know, you're in Chicago where, you know, it's a big city. It's the lights are a lot brighter. You mentioned the international appeal of Yu Darvish. Yeah, I think there's a potential here for a lot of growth for especially so late into the career of Yu Darvish, where just from a him on the field perspective, there's not a ton of wear and tear on that arm. He's had some injuries here and there, but nothing major over the last few years. So and obviously he gets a later start in his career in the major leagues. So there could be a few more years of really good baseball left in that arm for Yu Darvish. So it might be an interesting one to watch.
Well, and we're going to end this show completely off topic. This is you guys and myself getting to know Cody here.
All right.
I've got some random questions. I haven't even looked through these. I don't know what the question is going to be, but Cody's going to be put in the hot seat here to answer whatever question I pull out of this.
I'm ready.
And here we go. Is cereal soup? Why or why not?
Cereal soup? No, it's cereal. What?
Okay.
Question? I mean,
that was pretty dumb.
That assumes milk is a broth.
Well, which, it is, to be fair, it is called What the Heck. I think I did get a What the Heck response
right
from you.
Yeah,
but yeah, cereal's not soup.
No, that's no way. As it's like I said, it's got to be sort of a broth base, which milk is not. I don't know, unless you're getting like real heavy cream milk or something with your cereal, maybe you could justify it, but no, that's cereal is cereal.
Maybe if you let it sit long enough, but then you're just, then it's a soggy cereal,
yeah,
right?
I'm a man who believes that cereal is cereal. A hot dog is not a sandwich, it's a hot dog, okay? Let's get that straight.
What's your favorite cereal, by the way?
Oh, I would go, see, I'm boring. I'll probably say something like, God, you know, I like a Honey Bunches of Oats.
Okay.
I'll go with that. I used to like Wheaties as a kid. Like, not even Frosted Flakes.
Wow.
I just liked Wheaties. Yeah, very boring cereal choices. Although, I'm a big sucker for Cocoa Puffs, for sure.
Mine's Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which I know is not healthy.
I didn't even think of that. Cinnamon Toast is definitely up there. That's on the Mount Rushmore, for sure.
And then probably in my older age, I don't eat much cereal anymore. But if I did, I'd probably go with like a Cracklin' Oat brand. That makes me feel a little bit healthier, or you know, maybe a Raisin Bran type thing.
Yeah, I mess around with the Raisin Bran, absolutely.
Yep. And I avoid putting the sugar on it like I did when I was a kid.
That was the thing. I would go Wheaties with two big scoops of sugar. It's like, why not just have Frosted Flakes at that point? But
well, if you guys want to comment, is cereal soup? Why or why not? Comment in the comment section. Make sure you guys subscribe here on Mojo Break Media Channel. We're doing at least two shows a week. We plan on doing more. But once again, thank you guys for tuning in.
Thanks, everybody, for checking out the Mojo Break Dugout Session. We'll see you next time.